I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
The Chris Ann Hall Show.
Any varmint that crosses that lady's path has met its match. Come on!
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. So happy to have you here today. I want to remind you, before we get started, that you can go to my website, chrisannhall.com, for a limited time and get my ebook, In Defense of Liberty, absolutely free. But if you don't hurry, it's going to go away. Don't you like that? It's how marketing works, right? I want to apologize. I don't know. I have this allergy thing going on, and my nose keeps itching. And so it's very unprofessional on the radio, but you know what? I'm not a professional. I am in Missouri this week, and I'm going to be doing some interviews, and I'm very excited about them. Today, our first interview is going to be with Jamie Stull from the Family Vision Center. Now, why is this important? Because, you see, liberty requires self-sufficiency. And self-sufficiency requires that we lose government dependency. And Jamie Stull and his group have done something, I don't know, outside of the box. Outside of the government-brainwashed box that we've been living in. And I want to share this interview with you, with Jamie Stull, and let him tell you what it is that he's done. I have with me today Jamie Stull, the Director of Development for the Family Vision Center here in St. Peters, Missouri. And I wanted to do this interview with you because you have a very unique place here. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us what the Family Vision Center is and show us why it's so unique and special.
Yeah, we as far as we know, we are a one-of-a-kind ministry. We are a free, full-service Christian lending library, and that's a mouthful, but it is exactly what it says. We are free to the public, we're open to the public, and we're a full-service library just like the public library, but everything that we have in our building, 15,000 items, are items, resources, available to the public, written from a Christian point of view. So even if they're not written specifically by a Christian author, we can trust that they have been written from a biblical point of view.
How do people interact with your facility? How does it work?
Just like a public library, a family can come in, they ask for a library card, we have them fill out a very simple application form. We don't ask for proof of residency. Residency doesn't matter to us. We're open to the entire greater St. Louis area. They fill out the application form. We will give them a library card on the spot. And we trust that they say who they are, that they are who they say they are. We trust that they're going to use our resources carefully, and we trust that they're going to return them to us. And the only thing we ever expect from them is to return them on time, and if they have late fees, to pay their late fees.
And so, because it's radio, they don't see what I'm seeing. This is it's a pretty big place.
We have a 12,000-square-foot building, and about half of that is dedicated to library space.
So what's the other half dedicated to?
We have classrooms. We have about a 3,200-square-foot conference room. We have three classrooms. We have a storage room that also doubles as a science lab and an art room because we have classes and events in here throughout the week. Homeschool organizations use our library to offer biology classes, math classes, language classes, you name it. Kids are in here throughout the week using our facilities for all sorts of different things.
You have adults' books as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. We have more adult books than we do children's books, actually, and we probably, of the 15,000 resources we have, probably 10,000 are books that are pastoral studies and more aimed at adults, and then about 5,000 are probably children's books.
But you have an amazing homeschool curriculum store here as well.
We do.
How does that work?
We are one of the only homeschool curriculum consignment shops in the Midwest, again, that we know of. There may be some small shops operating in some places, but we're a full-service shop where families can bring in gently used curriculum. We set the prices for the curriculum. We do a 60-40 split with them. They keep 60% of the sale price. We keep 40%. It's good for the family selling it. They make a little bit off of their used curriculum. It's good for the family buying it because they can get good used curriculum at steeply discounted prices. And it's good for us because it's a little bit of cash flow to help the library stay open.
This is an amazing resource for homeschooling parents. I mean, not just from curriculum, but the facilities and their paintings on the walls from very talented young people. I mean, this is a beautiful place.
It really is. And we never planned for it. Our plans were not necessarily to be the homeschooling library, but obviously homeschoolers gravitated towards us because of the resources that we have open. But, you know, we do like to make it clear that we're open to the entire public. We're not just the homeschooling library. Right now we have, I don't know how many, probably 100 paintings hanging on the walls of the library that are out there from homeschooling students who attend art classes here on Fridays.
Well, you know, my ministry is called Liberty First. And I was really impressed at the dedication that your place here has to the principles of liberty and educating those principles.
You know, we like to stand with people who, this sounds cliche, but we like to stand with people who stand for something. And there's not enough of that in our culture anymore. People are so easily swayed by whatever the latest thought is, by whatever the latest soundbite is. And we like to stand with ministries who stand for something. So we do stand alongside ministries such as yours who stand for liberty. We stand alongside ministries who stand for creation science and a literal six-day creation. We stand alongside organizations who stand for businessmen being principled Christian businessmen in the workplace. And these are all different sorts of organizations that use our facilities that we work alongside in the community to try to reach the community and you know, quite frankly, to try to influence and grow the kingdom of God.
How do people find out more about this place?
We have a website, thefamilyvision.org. It's really quite a good website. You can tell you all about, you can view our catalog online. The complete catalog is free to anybody to view online. And that's probably the best way for folks to find out about us. For your listeners, anybody that doesn't live in the immediate St. Louis area can take advantage of our library because the library is viewable online, it's also available to them. They can pay a small subscription fee. Based on the level of subscription fee they pay, we will ship items directly to their home. Essentially, the subscription fee pays for shipping to and from their home. And we have families that take advantage of that from Maine to Florida and California to Washington and all over the United States. We had a family at one point that was a military family stationed in Germany that used our library online. So we really try as much as we can to make it available to anybody and everybody.
Now, you guys didn't start off like this.
Oh, no. We started small. We started in a 1,000-square-foot storefront with not even one full bookshelf of books. And it has been organic growth. And organic growth, but also growth at God's leading.
How would you encourage other people who would want to start something like you have in their communities?
Well, you know, I would say it is a lot of work, and it takes a lot of patience, and anybody who would want to contact us, you know, we are willing to come alongside somebody and tell them what we've done, and they can start their own library in their own community. We're willing to come along with the right group who would be able to help us raise the funding, and we'll come in, and literally we'll come in and start the library in a community. Nothing that we do is proprietary. It's a library. You just have to know how to run a library. So, you know, we don't have secrets that we need to hold on to, and we're more than happy to help somebody start a library in their own community.
Well, I just want to tell you I'm really honored that you are considering putting my work into your library. That's just, to me, that touches my heart, and I appreciate the way liberty-minded people are able to work together, and I appreciate the fact that one book in this place can touch so many people, and that education is the key to maintaining who we are.
That's true. It's true, and that's what our motto, if you will, is faithfully equipping generations. And the way that we equip generations is through positive resources. And it's true that one book can influence hundreds of people, truly.
Our progressive education system has really already seized on that.
There's nothing progressive about our education system.
Well, and it's good, though, because what you're showing people is that they can put the power of education back into the hands of their own community.
Absolutely.
And that's the key to turning all of this refocusing of America around.
Absolutely. I believe it's going to be Christian families who are going to reform education, and they're going to do it because they're going to do it in their homes with their children.
And that's why homeschooling is so important and why the resources that you have for homeschoolers. I'm excited about the fact that we can get online and have an online relationship with you. I have listeners all over the country. I have listeners now. We have just picked up a radio station in Canada. And so you might be getting contact for some people in Canada who have heard this now and are excited about the resources that you have available.
I hope.
Wouldn't that be great?
I love Canada.
Well, again, I want to mention that this is Jamie Stull. He's the Director of Development with the Family Vision, Faithfully Equipping Generations. How awesome is that here in St. Peter's, Missouri? Give them your website again and tell them how to get in touch with you. And, just thank you for being with us today.
It is thefamilyvision.org, a very informative website, and we would love for you to have you go on there, check out all of the information that we have, and feel free to contact us via email, call. You know, our phone numbers are on there. Call us. I'd love to have a conversation with anybody.
Thank you so much for your time, Jamie, and we'll be praying for you.
Thank you.
Think about this. For 10 years, these people have been running a library without any government funding whatsoever. Can you imagine having community libraries? Libraries independent of state and federal funding. Sort of defeats the whole propaganda that if the government doesn't do it, we won't. That's the out of the box that we need. We need to start believing in ourselves. We need to start believing in the ingenuity of Americans again. We need to start believing in the resourcefulness of the people of this country and stop being so government dependent. Government dependency is the death of liberty.
Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Liberty breeds liberty. Servitude breeds servitude. Liberty requires personal responsibility. Personal responsibility requires independent thought and self-governance. All these things always lead to greater liberty and less external government because you have internal government, self-governance. But liberty is not passive. You have to work and think independently to have liberty. You have to be willing to start your own libraries. You have to be willing to have your own fire departments. You have to be willing to have your own schools. You have to be willing to provide your own services. Liberty requires thinking outside the government box. And liberty always breeds liberty. Servitude also breeds servitude. Servitude requires no personal responsibility, no independent thought. Servitude requires no self-governance. When you are a slave, you simply live doing what you are told, regardless of how ridiculous it may be. I'm laughing because my husband and I were at the airport in Chicago waiting for the shuttle bus to pick us up at the car rental place to take us to the airport. And the shuttle bus stopped and let people off. Well, we were there with some other people. We tried to get on. And the shuttle bus driver said, no, you don't get on over here. The bus that will take you to the airport, you board over there, which was about 100 feet down the way. And we thought, okay. And so we all moved 100 feet down. This particular bus driver, after unloading all his passengers, got in the bus and drove 100 feet down and opened the doors and said, okay, it's time to get in. Servitude requires no independent thought. When you are a slave, you simply do what you're told, regardless how ridiculous it may be. And everybody standing around thought, how ridiculous. His response, I'm just following the rules. Slaves don't have to think about the difference between logical and illogical. They don't even have to think about the difference between right and wrong. When you're a slave, you can blame everyone for your trouble because you've made no decisions to get where you are. Being a slave requires no thought, so the ability to think and act independently atrophies. Servitude breeds a desire for more servitude, because as I used to tell my daughter, don't be lazy-brained. Lazy brains need more and more services and become lazier and lazier and lazier. Servitude breeds a desire for servitude and a fear of liberty. When you have the security blanket of being told what to do every single day and never have to think about that and never even have to contemplate, never even think about consequences, never even have to think about what, where, when, and how, it's scary to have to think again. It's like walking a tightrope with no net and no security rope. But being a slave, you don't have to worry about that, because somebody's always there to tell you what to do next. Slaves need more and more government to take the place of the atrophied independent thought and lack of self-governance. That's why government always wants to provide more and more services to their citizens, to encourage servitude and diminish the desire for liberty, to make liberty actually scary. You have to fear those people who want liberty. You have to fear those people who want liberty for you. With every government service, we become more and more enslaved. That is why this Family Vision Center library is so important. Because it's not just a library. It's self-thought, self-governance. It's liberty. And the fundamental principle of this breeds more liberty. Can you think of another service that needs to be provided by the people instead of by the government?
My mom always said I was born for this. And some people wouldn't like that I was different. It never really mattered how hard it would be, cause she filled me with love and the strength to leave. She said,
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
You know, it's interesting when you think about it from that perspective, isn't it? Which services do the government provide that could very well be provided by the people? I mean, we would think the library, of all things, is a necessary government service. I mean, if you don't have the government providing you and funding your library, you're not going to have one. But you see, these people, Mr. Stahl and his group, have proven that wrong. Quite successfully, by the way. But remember, servitude breeds servitude. What about if we think about all the services that used to be provided by the people who are now provided by the government? Schools. Schools used to be local. Schools used to be run by parents. Schools used to be funded by communities. Schools used to be funded in other communities through the charity of people. But you see, when the 501c3 kicked in, we stopped tithing to our churches and instead tithed to the government. So then the government would take care of all these things. People used to take care of the homeless, used to feed people in need. And now we need government food banks and federal subsidies to do these things. Because servitude breeds servitude. What about, here's the big one, hospitals. I find it ironic that the Affordable Care Act is picking on the Christian churches, saying that they have to conform with the government hospitals, that the government that the churches can't be involved in this public activity without being conforming to the government's plan. The irony is, the government is not traditionally the provider of hospitals. The churches. Throughout history, it's been the churches who have created the hospitals. The government is just a modern train of thought. Why? Because servitude breeds servitude. The government slips in with a little bit of funding, and the people stop giving, and so then more funding is needed. And there you have it. Government now assuming a job that used to be held by the people. Not only assuming a job that used to be held by the people, but refusing to recognize its historical origins, and then making us believe that governments have always done hospitals. How else would we ever do hospitals? Because you see, if we don't have the government doing hospitals, we'll never have hospitals, because governments have always done hospitals. No, they haven't. People have always done hospitals. Communities have always done hospitals. There are advancements by people, not by government. The problem is that we got all outraged when the President of the United States said, "You didn't build this." And we're like, "Yes, we did. We didn't build this. We built this. You didn't build this. Government didn't build this. Government didn't build that." Well, that was in the past, isn't it? I mean, all the examples that we thought of government not building things was a while ago. Because we've been so brainwashed into believing that we need federal funding and government money to do everything. We can't have a successful organization. We can't have a big event. We can't have this, that, or the other unless we get proper grants and funding. How about we start returning back to the principles of self-governance? Liberty breeds liberty, and servitude breeds servitude. It is time that we break free from the chains. It is time for us to cry out, "Give me liberty." And in that light, because yesterday I missed an important anniversary, the anniversary of Patrick Henry's "Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death" speech, March 23rd, 1775, St. John's Church, Richmond, Virginia. Let's do that. Let's tell Patrick Henry's story and think about it from a modern perspective. Give me liberty. Mr. President, no man thinks more highly than I do of patriotism, as well as abilities of the very worthy gentlemen who have just addressed the House. But different men often see the same subject in different lights, and therefore I hope it will not be thought disrespectful to those gentlemen if, entertaining as I do, opinions of a character very opposite to theirs. I shall speak forth my sentiments freely and without reserve. This is no time for ceremony. The question before the House is one of awful moment to this country. For my own part, I consider it as nothing less than a question of freedom or slavery, and in proportion to the magnitude of the subject, ought to be the freedom of the debate. It's only in this way that we can hope to arrive at truth and fulfill the great responsibility we hold to God and our country. Should I keep back my opinions at such a time through fear of giving offense? I should consider myself as guilty of treason towards my country and of an act of disloyalty towards the majesty of heaven, which I revere above all earthly kings. Wow. Wouldn't it be nice if we could speak our minds and not be afraid of political correctness? He says, Mr. President, it is natural to the man to indulge in the illusions of hope. We are apt to shut our eyes against a painful truth and listen to the song of that siren till she transforms us into beasts. Is this the part of wise men, engaged in a great and arduous struggle for liberty? Are we disposed to be of the number of those having eyes, see not, and having ears, hear not, the things which so nearly concern their temporal salvation? For my part, whatever anguish of spirit it may cost, I am willing to know the whole truth, to know the worst, and to provide for it. Slavery breeds slavery, he says. And independent thought breeds liberty. He says, I have but one lamp by which my feet are guided, and that is the lamp of experience. I know no way of judging the future but by the past. And judging by the past, I wish to know what there has been in the conduct of the British ministry for the last 10 years to justify those hopes with which gentlemen have been pleased to solace themselves. And the House? Is it that insidious smile with which our petition has been lately received? Trust it not, sir. It will prove a snare to your feet. Suffer not yourselves to be betrayed with a kiss. Ask yourselves how this gracious reception of our petition comports with these warlike preparations which cover our waters and darken our land. Our fleets and armies, necessary to a work of love and reconciliation? Have we shown ourselves so unwilling to be reconciled that force must be called in to win back our love? Let us not deceive ourselves, sir. These are the implements of war and subjugation, the last arguments to which kings resort. I ask, gentlemen, sir, what means this martial array if its purpose be not to force us into submission? Can gentlemen assign any other possible motive for it? Has Great Britain any enemy in this quarter of the world to call for all this accumulation of navies and armies? No, sir. She has none. They are meant for us. They can be meant for no other. They are sent over to bind and rivet upon us those chains which the British ministry have so long forging. And what have we to oppose to them? Shall we try argument? Sir, we've been trying that argument for the last 10 years. Have we anything new to offer up to the subject? Nothing. We have held the subject up in every light of which it is capable, but it has been all in vain. Shall we resort to entreaty and humble supplication? What terms shall we find which we have not been already exhausted? Let us not, I beseech you, sir, deceive ourselves. Sir, we have done everything that could be done to avert the storm which is now coming on. We have petitioned, we have remonstrated, we have supplicated, we have prostrated ourselves before the throne and have implored its interposition to arrest the tyrannical hands of the ministry and parliament. Our petitions have been slighted. Our remonstrances have been produced additional violence and insult. Our supplications have been disregarded. We have been spurned with contempt from the foot of the throne. In vain, after these things, May we indulge in the fond hope of peace and reconciliation? There is no longer any room for hope. If we wish to be free, if we mean to preserve inviolate those inestimable privileges for which we have been so long contending, if we mean to basely abandon to the noble struggle in which we have been so long engaged, and which we have pledged ourselves never to abandon until the glorious object of our contest shall be obtained, we must fight. I repeat it, sir, we must fight. An appeal to arms and to the God of hosts is all that is left us. They tell us, sir, that we are weak, unable to cope with so formidable an adversary. But when shall we be stronger? Will it be the next week or the next year? When we are totally disarmed? When a British guard shall be stationed in every house? Shall we gather strength by irresolution and inaction? Shall we acquire the means of effectual resistance by lying supinely on our backs and hugging the delusive phantom of hope until our enemies shall have bound us hand and foot? Sir, we are not weak if we make proper use of those means which the God of nature hath placed in our power. How is that? What is the power we hold? He's saying, we have the power of God in the name of liberty.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist. Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Patrick Henry says, they tell us, sir, that we are weak, unable to cope with so formidable an adversary. But when shall we be stronger? Will it be the next week or the next year? Will it be when we are totally disarmed and when a British guard shall be stationed in every house? Shall we gather strength by irresolution and inaction? Shall we acquire the means of effectual resistance by lying supinely on our backs and hugging the delusive phantom of hope until our enemies shall have bound us hand and foot? Sir, we are not weak if we make a proper use of those means which the God of nature hath placed in our power. 3 millions of people armed in the holy cause of liberty. And in such a country is that which we possess, are invincible by any force which our enemy can send against us. Besides, sir, we shall not fight our battles alone. There is a just God who presides over the destinies of nations, who will raise up friends to fight our battles for us. The battle, sir, is not to the strong alone. It is to the vigilant, the active, the brave. Besides, sir, we have no election. If we were base enough to desire it, it is now too late to retire from the contest. There is no retreat but in submission and slavery. Our chains are forged. Their clanking may be heard on the plains of Boston. The war is inevitable. And let it come. I repeat it, sir. Let it come. It is in vain, sir, to extenuate the matter. Gentlemen may cry, peace, peace. But there is no peace. the war has actually begun. The next gale that sweeps from the north will bring to our ears the clash of resounding arms. Our brethren are already in the field. Why stand we here idle? What is it that gentlemen wish? What would they have? Is life so dear and peace so sweet to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death. Give me liberty or give me death. We want to say, give me public libraries. Give me federal health care. Give me federally supplied houses and federally supplied food and federally supplied cell phones. We want to say, give me bonds and chains. Because that's what Patrick Henry was saying. What is it that we could want? What is it that we're wishing for? What is it that we could possibly want in this life that rises above peace? What is it that rises above liberty? He says, look, all you could ever want is life and peace. But are life and peace so dear to us that we would purchase our life and our peace through chains and slavery? He's like, look, if you don't have liberty, your life is servitude. If you don't have liberty, your peace, perhaps he should have called that national security, we'd have understood a little better, your peace will become your chains and bonds. Why? Because without liberty, you are a slave. And slavery breeds more slavery. And only liberty breeds more liberty. I know not what course others may take. But as for me and my house, we choose liberty. God bless. See you tomorrow.